if, you know, strategically, the Iranians go after our critical infrastructure, right? The things that will really disrupt the social fabric of the United States and get people into the streets and very unhappy with, you know, government's ability to protect, they're going to do it.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast, where we talk to the people who keep the internet safe. These industry experts share their innovative cyber defense technologies, vital insights into threats, and predictions for the future of cybersecurity. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. This podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud platform, infrastructure for SecOps where everything is built API first. Scale with confidence as your business grows. Start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it. My guest today is Michael Hamilton, a longtime information security practitioner, entrepreneur, and executive with more than 30 years of experience across government, critical infrastructure, and private sector. He currently serves as Chief Technology Officer at Pisces International, where he leads technology strategy, manages technical teams, and supports data sharing partnerships focused on protecting public infrastructure. Earlier, he served as field CISO at Lumify and founded Critical Insight, a managed monitoring and response platform designed to help secure infrastructure systems used by cities and utilities. Earlier in his career, Michael was a chief information security officer for the city of Seattle and a policy advisor to the state of Washington. He has also worked as a managing consultant with VeriSign Global Security Consulting and served as vice chair of the Department of Homeland Security's State, Local, Tribal, and Territorial Government Coordinating Council. His experience spans sectors including government, energy, transportation, finance, and academia, giving him a broad perspective on cybersecurity risk and resilience. Thanks so much for being with us on the show today, Michael. It's a real honor to have you, sir.
Chris, you make me sound so official. Oh, my God.
I was kind of amazed I made it through that.
Person, man. This is bad expectation management right out of the gate.
Well, I didn't want to start us off on the wrong foot, but I think you deserve the accolades. You know, you did the time. Enjoy the surprise. I don't know.
Retirement is being good to me.
Awesome. Let's start by telling us a little bit about your background and what initially drew you into technology and eventually a career in cybersecurity.
My education is in earth science. And so I got diplomas back there that I'm very proud of. So I have 3 degrees from USC in geology, chemistry, and oceanography. And I have cool stories like I've been to the bottom of the ocean in an 8-foot titanium sphere called the Alvin, right? That's the research sub that found the Titanic. I was interested in mud at the time. After I got out of school, I went to work at the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, and I worked on the team that did oceanography from space.
Very cool.
This is right when the internet was very nascent and everybody started getting connected. And this thing came out called SATAN, the System Administrator's Tool for the Analysis of Networks. And it was the very first vulnerability scanner. And it would work in the Mozilla browser at the time. Forget what it was called. What was that first browser? Don't remember.
Firefox.
Mosaic. Ran in Mosaic. So we were instructed to secure our research networks to survive a SATAN scan. And so I did this. And in doing this, I figured out how to turn Sun workstations into firewalls, decided that was more interesting, and just left JPL and went into business hand-rolling my own firewalls and selling them in Southern California. And that was early 1990s.
Okay, so just before the whole internet became a thing for the wider population.
Yeah.
Interesting. In your work in studying oceans from space around that time, I remember reading about a project that got canceled in the early 2000s where they had a satellite with sensors in between the sun and the earth that was going to help monitor the planet, and that got nixed. That wouldn't be something that was in your sphere at that time, would it?
No. The ones that I was working with observed the ocean color, basically.
Okay.
And so the thing that we wanted to figure out is how much carbon does the ocean take up out of the atmosphere during the process of phytoplankton photosynthesis? Because eventually that carbon gets used by plants, right? Photosynthesis, and then little fish eat that and bigger fish eat those and they die and they go to the bottom. And that process is how carbon is taken from the atmosphere and sequestered as mud in the bottom of the ocean. And we want to know that rate from space.
And we'd like to do more of that too, I suppose.
Yeah, but we don't do that anymore because we don't want to talk about this, but I got a lot of friends at JPL and JPL is almost no more. It's been cut to shreds.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I also understand music's been an important part of your life. How did that start and how does it fit along your career in cybersecurity?
Yeah, well, so my philosophy is that everybody needs a crazy hat, right? I mean, there's just got to be something that you do that turns you into somebody completely different, right? And so for me, you know, I mean, I hit this midlife crisis thing right around 50 and I had, you know, all of these, you know, skydiving, buy a Harley, half an ounce of blow and a hooker, you know, and I decided to buy an electronic drum set and teach myself to play drums.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, to be
probably clear, one of the healthier paths.
It wasn't healthy. I'm still married. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of benefits from this. So, you know, and then I got together with these other two guys and we've been playing in a band for about 15 years and play live around here all the time. And that turned into this music studio to hold all my stuff. And now 7 bands play there. There would actually be one playing right now, 2 floors below my office here today, but they played last night in Seattle and they're tired.
Very cool. Seattle played a really big part in my youthful musical taste. You know, the grunge came out of Seattle. That was changed the world, really, I think. Go ahead.
Well, it's just over here. I got, you know, plug for my town. Bremerton really is a music town. And my music studio here, undisclosed basement studios, is right out here in what they have turned into Quincy Square. Quincy Jones got his musical start in Bremerton. Who knew? And now this is Music and Art Street. And everybody sees it's funny. From the street, you see people with guitars going in and out of what looks like a typewriter shop all the time. Nobody knows that in the basement there's this thing going on. So yeah, it exploded. It got out of control. And music is the crazy hat. You know, we're working on our 4th album right now. It's really fun.
Very cool. And there is some connection between mathematicians and musicians.
Yes.
And hence computers. So I think it's all in the same part of the spectrum, maybe different colors though.
Yeah, I mean, I could go into my whole spiel about how, you know, if you are any kind of musician, you know, I have no idea how that fret thing works, but, you know, if you're a guitarist, whatever, you have to make the weak side of your body behave and work.
Yeah.
Right. And so what that does is that wires up the weak side of your brain and provides all these neural pathways that you didn't have access to before. So it's also healthy. Right. So again,
yes.
I didn't choose the half an ounce of blow and a hooker. This was...
Sorry, I only laugh because it is way more common than it should be, right?
Neither confirm nor deny. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm turning 48 and I can feel the wheels starting to get a little wobbly. So hopefully I'll make a smart choice like you as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've been in this for 30 years. How's it changed? What is the biggest change now compared to when you started? How does it look?
Yeah, well... when I started, you know, I was working a lot in the private sector and I, you know, contracted and consulted and I've worked for everybody, you know, Applied Materials and Safeway and Walmart, and Ross Dress for Less and, you know, Harris Beef Ranch, you name it. And, you know, back then it was really driven by a lot of regulatory stuff. Right.
Right.
And, you know, and that is true today. But today it is much more aligned with risk management and a fiduciary responsibility, because this whole business about getting cybered is pretty foreseeable, right? So how is your business going to survive this when it happens? That's why federal government talks about resilience all the time. Resilience means, you know, be able to take a punch and get back up off the mat before the 10 count, you know?
So,
you know, it's become much, you know, it's still about prevention and trying to make bad things not happen. But now it's really about, okay, so when it happens, here's how we're going to put out the little fire before the house is engulfed in flames. So there's been a real shift in this mindset towards monitoring, detection, investigation, response, and optimizing all of that, because the thing is going to happen, right? There's no firewall for stupid, right? Somebody's going to do something. You know, hey, look at this USB stick I found in the parking lot, Jack, you know. So, you know, figuring out how to let's just say, minimize the impact term of the risk expression has become much more of a focus over the years, right? The other thing is, you know, I mean, look at the geopolitical context we're living in right now. Right now, it's like nation states. Stryker is a medical products company, and they just, you know, if the reports are true, and it's still it's fog of war stuff right now, but they had 200,000 devices wiped, including
Got hit pretty hard.
Okay. All right. That we have crossed a Rubicon right there, because that was done maliciously and in retaliation for kinetic things going on the other side of the world. So, yeah, things have changed. Yeah.
Strange times for sure. One of the projects that you are involved in, you're the chief technology officer for Pisces International, and that's got a very cool mission. And that was one of the things I wanted to really get into on the show today. So maybe do you want to tell us a little bit about it, and then we can kind of chase down what that mission is and how we can help make it a thing in the world.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so for context, you know, let's talk about the importance of your local government. Okay. Cities, counties, okay, public utilities, things like that. And, you know, and what is critical infrastructure? All right. So critical infrastructure is these 16 sectors, right? Dams, water, finance, energy, healthcare, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out local government cuts across a lot of those. All right. They make your toilet flush. They make your water drinkable. You know, they provide the communications to get the fire department to your house before you're dead. You know, that's real handy stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I made this transition from, you know, completely working in the private sector and, you know, securing Safeway and helping them meet their PCI requirements, you know, to taking this job at the city of Seattle. You know, you guys do what? You don't even monitor your networks. You're buying firewalls and antivirus and calling it good, and it's not good. So, you know, this, like I said, there's this, you know, focus on monitoring and everything. And when I got to local government and understood how important that was at the scale we really live, right? I can live.
Right.
ATMs don't work. I'm cool. If 911 doesn't work, I might not be cool.
It's a problem.
Right. Yeah. It's a problem. So, you know, I decided in starting my company and in starting the nonprofit that we were going to focus on local government, right?
Okay.
Right. So it's critical infrastructure at the local scale. So what Pisces does is we do no cost cyber monitoring for small, and I mean sub 150 employees, right? Because, you know, anybody bigger ought to go, you know, find some
can afford
commercial
something,
solution.
Yeah.
Right. We don't want to compete with the private sector on this stuff. Right. So we monitor for free little cities, counties, public utilities, rural healthcare, school districts, things like that, some nonprofits. And the reason it's free is because we get states to pay for it, and they have a variety of ways they do that. But we collect metadata and IDS alerts from their network, and we put that in a monitoring stack. The monitoring stack is front-ended by a monitoring platform called Malcolm that was developed at Idaho National Lab with Homeland Security money. And we make all the data available in real time to 15 universities that are teaching students to be cyber analysts by being cyber analysts with live fire.
Very cool.
In that way, we provide some infrastructure protection. We're looking for little fires to break out and helping to, you know, put those out before they get big. We are providing workforce development where, you know, the students get this operational experience with real-time events in critical infrastructure. And research opportunities, because using the Malcolm platform and the OpenSearch database, we have integration places for agentic AI and behavioral alerting using machine learning algorithms to develop statistical baselines. You know, frankly, there's just all kinds of things that graduate students, capstone projects, things like that could do that we could put into production here. So it's this kind of organic thing that makes itself better with the process of getting all of these students into these jobs, right? So cyber analyst is the fifth fastest growing job in the country, which is changing because this whole business about, you know, the AI driven SOC is starting to get very real. So, you know, what was an entry level analyst is not going to be the same thing, not even 6 months from now. So
What's so cool about what you're doing is they're getting to work with real data in like a real scenario, and that's the kind of experience you can't replace with a product or a course.
Yeah, and ideally, they are monitoring, you know, cities, counties, organizations in their own state, right? Mm-hmm. So the mission focus, I'm making sure the toilets continue flushing in Montana, right? That it's really driven home with that. So, you know, we're active in 5 states right now. We're expanding into Montana and Hawaii.
Cool.
Pretty big footprint in Washington state. We do some monitoring in Kentucky. We do some monitoring in Idaho. And we're talking to a bunch of different countries about stuff.
Very cool. What do you think are the biggest blind spots cities have? Like when you go in and help them, is it just they're not doing anything with their data or have nobody watching it?
Oh, man,
or...
that's such a third rail of a question. So, you know, I will answer this honestly.
Okay.
One of the biggest problems in local government and probably government writ large is the entitlement of the users, right? So people in government, you know, they've grown accustomed to being able to use government provided technology for basically whatever they want to do. Okay. And when I was at the city of Seattle, we took a lot of measurements and I could prove that 40% of the compromised assets on the network were due to the use of personal email. Okay. So, right, here's Outlook and it's all cleaned up and we've dropped all the bad links and bad attachments on the floor. And right next to it is a web browser opened up Bubba's email service with no controls. So what good did it do to spend this money? So if there was a policy of all personal use will from this day forward be conducted on a personal device and Facebook lives here, Gmail lives here, you've just driven 40% of the problem off a cliff. So why not get a 40% uptick for a policy change, which basically costs you nothing? I don't know.
Do you think that's just an education piece there? Because it sounds like a pretty easy fix. And if you pitched it to the right person, I can't see how anybody would not go along with that.
Okay, well, that's a good observation because I have pitched this to some people and, you know, working as a, you know, a virtual CISO for, we'll just say a local government of Washington state, I was asked to do a policy review and I put that into the acceptable use policy, right? You will use your phone for, you know, doing your personal stuff and the mayor signed it. And there's a hospital district or it's a group of hospitals in Kansas. And, Mike Nixon out there is the, you know, chief of information security for this group of hospitals. And he and I talked about it and he implemented that policy. And so he's, you know, those are the two places I know wherever that's occurred. And it's too bad that we can't be a little more pervasive about that. I have other ideas on what, you know, federal government should be doing, you know, to try and help local governments. But that's not going to happen. Right. There was an executive order that came out that said state and local government are responsible for infrastructure protection and disaster management. So basically what CISA and FEMA have done for us, states and locals, you're on your own now.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think that a lot of states are trying to pick up the slack, notably New York, for example, is regulating their own finance sector, their own healthcare sector. States like California and Texas are setting up statewide telemetry so that they are monitoring their own local governments and they can see doorknob twisting, you know, happening across the state before something happens. Mm-hmm. So these operation centers are popping up. You know, Pisces is getting more popular, right? This whole, we'll monitor your local governments, we'll train your people, right, into this rapidly growing job. And, you know, plus or minus provide the state with data under certain circumstances, right? If the state guard is that if there's a significant cyber disruption, yeah, we're going to give you data. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I think that the gaps are going to get filled with more state support rather than federal support. And ultimately, I think that will be a good thing.
Yeah, I can see it. I also worry about, you know, just different levels of preparedness across different states. I feel like it's something some people are going to excel at and some people are going to be the examples of why the others should work harder at it, right?
Yep. There's going to be haves and have nots for sure. I mean, not everybody is willing to invest in controls, especially controls, you know, to, like I say, minimize the impact of these things. Mm-hmm. And certainly fewer and fewer people want to hire people to do that. We see that happening. But you cannot dissociate the technology that's telling you there's a problem with the human that validates that's going on in a lot of environments, like, I don't know, a dam, a hospital. I mean, right? I want that human in the loop. So, you know, there's still going to be plenty of, you know, opportunities for employment, if we all harness AI appropriately.
Hey, it's Nicole from the Lima Charlie marketing team. Many security teams deal with tool sprawl, dozens of different solutions that create gaps in visibility and slow down response times. Our SecOps Cloud platform consolidates your security stack into a unified platform where everything works together. Lima Charlie gives you comprehensive endpoint visibility and automated response capabilities in milliseconds instead of minutes, so you can stop threats before they spread across your environment. Try our scalable infrastructure for your security services for free at limacharlie.io.
And you mentioned dams and hospitals. Are there cyber threats that are most concerning for infrastructure systems like those, or utilities and transportation? Is it ransomware, the big boogeyman?
No, it's these wipers. Oh my God. I mean, given okay. that there is a country that has, like, the gloves are off. There is right. absolutely no reason that they can't take down hospitals permanently with this wiper software, right? I mean, the first time we
just
saw this
used... Just delete the boot sector and good luck.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first time we saw this used was against Saudi Aramco, okay? It was a long time ago, and 30,000 computers just got bricked, right? And they just had to, you know, buy new ones. If, you know, strategically, the Iranians go after our critical infrastructure, right? The things that will really disrupt the social fabric of the United States and get people into the streets and very unhappy with, you know, government's ability to protect, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, interestingly, you know, I don't know how much you track the healthcare sector, but there's a big conference going on right now called HIMSS, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the largest healthcare conference in the world, I believe. The HIMSS, while the HIMSS conference is going on, is when the Iranians decided to pull the trigger on Stryker.
Okay. Right.
They have the third largest vendor booth at HIMSS.
Presenting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And the hospital is such a complex environment because you have all these, devices that I would say were sort of developed in that academic world where security isn't forefront of the mind. And a lot of those devices are even older because they're expensive, and so they stick around longer.
Yep.
And then you've thrown them all together on this network in this chaotic environment. Like, I imagine it's definitely a soft target for motivated nation state actors to cause some problems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I'd be watching out for too is, manufacturing and supply chain, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, they've stated that, you know, they were going to disrupt the global economy, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm one, you know, for example, in, I think it's Bahrain, they have a lot of aluminum smelting going on there. Well, they hit that mm-hmm. stuff. That percolates all over the world.
Sure.
So, you know, these things that have this outsized impact, you know, for example, Stryker, which is a product provider to healthcare globally, right? That's, you know, that wasn't a mistake that they went after something like that. That was targeting.
Yeah. I wonder what recovery from something like that looks like too. I guess we'll see, but it's going to take a long time, I think, until they're back up and running.
Stuff.
Yeah. Do you think, like, the growth of connected systems and IoT devices inside of government, I think of like smart meters and just all the innovation that's trying to take place, that's expanding our attack surface?
It is, you know, more and more though, if you're in government and you're buying stuff, there are some things that were kicked off during the last administration. For example, you know, the software bill of materials, right? So, mm-hmm. so you're going to sell a piece of software to the government and it's got to have, you know, an SBOM with it. And that tracks all the components back all the way to, the open source SSL library that's in there. So if that goes bad, you've gone bad, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is the IoT labeling, which I actually think the current administration dumped. If memory serves, and the article I read is the one that's in my mind right now. But so things like that kind of help government not buy that stuff. But specifically with respect to all of the networked junk that everybody is just hanging, you know, all over the place, doorbells and refrigerators and toasters and, you know, sex toy, whatever. All of this stuff that is networked becomes part of attack surface. And it's not really being used to steal things from people that have those things. They're taking over TVs and thermostats and things like that to obfuscate where their source is. When they attack something of interest that's a real target, it's going to look like it came from your home internet router.
Yeah.
So all this junk that we're hanging on our networks is fueling that. So that's a bad thing. Government, you know, I think because these programs have been put in place to help them by technology, right? So like this IoT labeling, it's got to be secure out of the box. You got to have a method for determining, discovering vulnerabilities, a method to get those patched, communications to your customers. I mean, things like that. That's smart. So maybe government, you know, won't be the biggest attack surface created by the implementation of all this IoT, you know, but some of it, you know, you brought up smart metering. You know, I mean, a vulnerability in a smart meter that gets exploited, right? It's not up to the government to keep that thing or the utility
patched.
Yeah. Right? That's the manufacturer. So,
and they've already sold it. They're not super concerned.
Right. And that stuff is, you know, in place now. And we didn't have, you know, those requirements to meet when that stuff went in place. I remember at the city of Seattle, we were looking at automated metering, and it's here. It's been here for a while. So, you know, stuff like that is probably going to be, but, you know, somebody would have to have some kind of master plan. Like that. It would be easier to take down a dam. It's only a single.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's privacy stuff too. I have a friend who does a lot of work in like wireless security, and he was demonstrating how he could tell you what his neighbor's water consumption was based off of the signals coming off of the meters. Right. Yeah. So it's, we're always in a rush to get the things out.
Yeah, well, that's the question, you know, do the vendors secure it, right, when they deploy it? Oh, well, we'll change your password, but okay, you're broadcasting in the clear.
You talked about working with universities earlier year with Pisces International. Yep. Like, how can academic institutions and maybe people like getting into the field, how can they get involved and contribute to making their community safer? Pisces obviously sounds like one path, but in the larger area where there might not be Pisces.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, so Pisces, you know, we're active at all these schools. And if somebody wants this experience, they would have to go to one of those schools, or those schools can contact us. And,
right.
You know, if you're in South Dakota, you know, that school, you know, the students would be monitoring jurisdictions in Washington State and Montana and Hawaii and these other places, because you don't have it. We're not monitoring any in your state. You know, we can get to that point, but that is one way to get in. I think getting kids involved earlier than that is a good idea. So we have a K-12 data set that anybody that wants to, and the curriculum was developed at Pacific Northwest National Lab in cooperation with Deb Wells, who's on my board of directors and has been an instructor at Central Washington University and writes great curriculum. Anybody can have the K-12 data and start teaching the K-12 stuff, right?
Very cool.
All up to you, right? We don't need any agreement with your state or anything like that. We also partner with organizations like cyber.org, and they have a real focus on K-12. I think that in other states, there are efforts to do the same kind of thing, you know, provide some kind of real world experience. And hopefully all this talk about skills-based hiring actually comes true. Because, you know, I got to tell you, the students that are going through this experience. So Chris, this is the truth. So this year we'll have about 1,000 students that go through the Pisces experience. Of those 500, they're going to wash out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Percent of it. And they're just going to like, this is too technical for me. This is not what I thought this was. This is not the job I want. You know, want to be a pen tester, whatever. And then of the remaining 50% of those are going to be really good. So You know, I have, you know, nominally 200 to 250 seats we're adding to the local bench right here in Washington State. And so if somebody wanted to, you know, get into some kind of program and, you know, go through, you know, some of this experience, our objective here is, and we're working on funding to do this, is to, as these people come off this assembly line, those that are in that top tier, we want to place those as interns in critical infrastructure organizations, provide them with defined bodies of work so that the organization doesn't have to put a lot of management into it. Policy review, you know, awareness training deck, watch the logs, right? They've been trained to do things like that, and get them paid. So you get funding to pay interns. We can help complete this loop of not only training them with these real-time events and critical infrastructure, but getting them more experience in these organizations so that then they are really ready to start, you know, go to, you know, have a little more choice in where they go to work, but also hopefully to stay sticky in where they are because we need them in those organizations.
Yeah. And that's invaluable, especially in this era of AI, where I think those entry-level jobs are going to become more scarce. So getting that foot in the door is such an important part of getting the flywheel of your career started.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, you know, when I started, there was no such thing as, you know, a degree in cybersecurity. In fact, the word didn't exist.
Yeah.
You had to be curious and take risk and stay up all night a lot. And so I have this non-LinkedIn bio that we probably shouldn't go through, but like for real, you know, you had to like brush up with the bad side if you wanted to, you know, learn this, you know, and you know, back in the OG days, you know, it's different now. And I actually, I'm sorry that people that come out of these 4-year degree programs in cybersecurity know a little teeny bit about a whole lot of different things. Never really exposed to one of those in sufficient depth to be able to go through it. And we are trying to get around that.
Yeah. Yeah, there was almost like a, I don't want to say innocence to it back in the day, but cryptocurrency didn't exist. So the financial motivation was different, you know, like it was mischief a lot of times.
Mischief,
Yeah. The nation states were there quietly, but it's definitely changed a lot. I'm not a big fan of cryptocurrency. I think it's responsible for like half the problems that we see today in cybersecurity. So
yeah, but on the other hand, you know, you talked about privacy, right? So should your financial transactions be all available for tracking, or would you like to keep any of those confidential, right? Those are the questions we end up getting into. And I mean, it's almost a moot conversation. Privacy is out the damn window, you know.
Most of those people I talk to in security is
stuff, you know,
we assume no privacy most of the time, right?
Yeah. I assume no privacy, you know, and I just don't make any bones about it. I don't hide anything.
Yeah.
I kind of wear it on my sleeve. So I'm like, here I am.
That's my strategy too. I probably overshare more than I should. Is there anything about cybersecurity today that makes you optimistic?
No, there's something that makes me very pessimistic though. No, there's nothing that makes me optimistic. You know, and I mean, our ability to combat this, you know, ended up being this Mobius strip of products that all, you know, look at a little teeny piece of this problem. And, you know, they have this little thing that they solve. But, the big overall thing is not being addressed at all. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're having our asses handed to us.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing that really bugs me. So, you have probably read that cybercrime is being called the third largest economy in the world, right? It's like on track for $10 trillion in global. Okay. That's the GDP of a country.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's the third largest country in the world if you put it all together.
Well, it's the third largest economy, third largest GDP. Okay. That's for sure. Right. Right?
So right.
Now, are they making roads, educating kids, taking care of old folks with that money?
Camouflage Lamborghinis.
No. No. Okay. So what they're doing, right? They're evolving. They've evolved into corporations and they have, you know, as a service models and things like that. Okay. So here's all this money going into all of this stuff. Okay. And if I say the five crime families of New York. You know what I'm talking about? Bonanno, Genovese, Colombo, right? Those guys, they didn't get really powerful until they came under a single governance structure. Okay. And then everything was different and everybody was kind of playing off same sheet of music and it was all for the sake of crime, right? So we've already seen a fairly prolific gang start to call themselves a cartel. And if all of this money starts to come, or even a significant fraction of it, comes under centralized governance. And here in the United States, we have significant judicial blunders that we've made, like the Citizens United ruling, okay, that effectively makes it, you know, okay to buy a senator, all right? They got money.
Yeah.
They can set up super PACs. They can fund super PACs.
I never even thought of that.
Yeah. Senators, right? And all, and we're talking about a global mafia economy. Okay. Right. Russia's GDP is $1.4 trillion. These guys are 10. All right. Yeah. If they start to do things with that money to influence global politics, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the oligarchs in Russia that are, you know, kind of peripherally, you know, aligned with crime, that becomes a global thing. Yeah. That's what I'm pessimistic about.
Oh, man. Another thing to keep me up at night.
Yeah, I'm good for that.
Yeah. All right. This is the last one I have for you. It's the one I ask of everybody that comes onto the show. It can be as wide or as narrow as you want. Okay. You might have just covered it. Do you have any predictions for the future of cybersecurity?
Yeah, I do. Clearly they don't let someone like me make public policy. Okay? But if I was to do that and I was to advise, you know, the federal government, here's what I'd say. We need to start treating our logical border as if it was a physical border and enforce a standard of behavior on this side of the demarc and an unwillingness or, you know, just an inability to play by the rules on this side means we progressively start locking out. And this would have to have the kind of attribution so we know where you're coming from, right? But we can do that. We start progressively locking out your country all the way up to the banks. Okay. And then all of the bankers can go stand on the desk of the president and say, make the criming stop because we can't do business. All right.
Yeah. So, and things will change fast then.
And things will change fast. Right. So you've heard of the Great Firewall of China. Mm-hmm. They do it, you know, they do it for creepy reasons. Depending on what government we have in place, it could be, you know, creepy reasons too, but we are technically able to do that. Yeah. So, you know, someday when we start to treat our logical border as a physical border, and don't make border jokes, right? I know a lot of people want to do that right now. That's what they're thinking, right? But if we start to do that, and as I say, enforce a standard of behavior on this side and, you know, have penalties that go along with noncompliance, stuff will start to change. But if we don't start having federal policy that starts looking at a giant picture like that, we're just going to keep having our asses handed to us.
Awesome. That's really interesting. I remember hearing, I think it was one of the executives at Google making his prediction for the future, and he figured eventually the internet would end up into three global zones controlled by Russia, China, and America. And I can see us kind of heading that way.
Is he part of that cabal of billionaires that's, you know, thinking the democracy is a failed experiment?
Possibly. He's very close with the DOD, so... who knows what goes on behind those boards?
Yeah.
Awesome. So thanks for coming on the show. I did talk to you before that we were going to play a piece of your music on the way out. We don't have that right now, but I will get it in the post editing process. Do you know which song it is? And you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, the one I gave you, Guns and Bombs. Is that the one I gave you?
I think so.
Okay. So it's got two parts. It's got a swingy, loungy part. And what you should envision are lobbyists on the stage throwing dollar bills into the audience. We're singing about guns and bombs, everything's rosy. And then we go into the punk part where we're actually going to war. And it's a little aggressive. makes me sweat quite a bit playing this. And then we go back to the loungy part and the lobbyists go back to work, throwing the money around, and then we go to war again. That's what the song is about.
It's almost like this pattern we see repeating over and over again, right?
Yeah. I mean, the context I have from being old really helps when you're doing punk music.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Mike. I really enjoyed this, and it's great to meet you. Hopefully, we'll find a way to work together on something in the future.
Great. All right. Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. I have really enjoyed the conversation, buddy.
Take care, sir.
Yep, you too.
And that brings us to the end of another great conversation. You can support our show by sharing your favorite episode with a friend, subscribe, give us a rating, or leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.